There aren't many entertainers that can truly be described as childhood heroes to a certain generation. Johnny Ball and Peter Purvis, for sure, and they've already been on the programme. But my guest today is also on that list. For a generation growing up in the 70s and 80s, Christopher Lillycrap remains one of our most loved presenters and musicians. Turned down for Play School for being too interesting, it was an audition for Rainbow which resulted in Chris being offered his own series. We'll tell you a story. I remember it very well. Well, Chris's story is as varied as it is fascinating, and there's more music on the horizon. I'm very pleased to welcome one of my childhood heroes to the programme, Christopher Lillycrap. Welcome to Abbey 104.
Hello there. Hello.
What's it
What a lovely
like?
introduction. I'm beginning to think, who is this bloke? Yeah.
What is it like when you look back on those times? Because you may not realize it, but presenters in your position have a real effect on a generation of children.
Yeah, but it wasn't just children. You see, the world was, pre-digital. It was different, wasn't it? There were, there was BBC One, BBC Two. Channel 4, ITV, and then occasionally Channel 5. That was it. And when we started, so you were mainstream. I mean, at one point, we'll tell you a story. I know because he used to come on just before Rainbow. We were getting 7.5 million viewers. Now, if you got 7.5 million viewers today, you'd be Strictly Come Waltzing, wouldn't you? You'd be mega. But we were mainstream, and they did some audience research on my program, and the significant number of people, let's say it was aimed for the under fives, but a large proportion of the audience, something like 50%, were well over that age. And I used to get fan mail from police officers who were on shifts and things coming off, and nurses who'd come off and were watching it, because we were on twice a day from lunchtime and then at tea time. And so we were part of the mainstream, and parents used to watch it with their kids. Now, of course, there's CBeebies, there's all these dedicated channels. But what it means is that the cake is still the same size. It's just got loads and loads of slices on it. And so, you mentioned Tony Arthur, Derek Griffiths, Brian Cant, me. We were known, we were names, but we were known in the mainstream of TV because parents were watching it. Maybe after the news or before the news, as well, grown-ups were. So we were part of that. That, I think, is why we had that much effect. I think, sadly, for a lot of the kids presenters now, won't have that. I don't know what it is, power, kudos, or whatever you want to call it. They're not known by as many people. It's as simple as that. And it's. Dare I say it, looking at some of it's cheaper. But then it has to be, because it can't sustain financially all those programs. We've created this monster that devours material. And so animation's a good way to go, because you can dub that into any language. And that's one of the other things that has happened. So you make something now, you've got to be able to make sure it's going to be sell to Indonesia or whatever, because you can actually you can dub it into those channels, which is where all the tweeny and the Teletubby thing and all those things came from. They're hailed as groundbreaking, whatever, but actually they were sponge faces that you could put any language to, where you couldn't put any language to us because we just wouldn't lip sync in Spanish, would we?
Let's look briefly at We'll Tell You a Story in more depth, because that was really the programme that launched you.
I'd done Playboard before that, which, as you mentioned before, I got as a result of failing the audition for Play School. And I only found out later why. I thought I'd got the job. I'd been in rep up in Nottingham Playhouse. I'd been in the roundabout children's theatre there, education, and then mainstream theatre, where I worked with people like John Price. So we want to make a. It was quite a time. It was one of those ones. Richard Eyre, Sir Richard Eyre, was the director, and it was one of those. I just was lucky. It was one of those extraordinary times. And then when I was leaving there, I went for an audition for Play School, because that was the kids' program to try and get on, wasn't it? And I made everybody laugh at the audition, the cameraman were falling about, and I thought, I've got this. I left the studio. I went home to my then wife and said, well, I think that's it, that's a certainty, you know. But boy was I wrong, because a week later I got a letter saying, terribly sorry you didn't get it. And it's So then I got a phone call a week later from somebody called Judy Whitfield, who said, would I come down to meet her at Television Centre? She wanted to discuss my audition and a possible programme. And I thought, okay. So off I went, and it was called Playboard. And that was my first job. And she'd seen my audition for Play School and was looking for somebody to front present a programme and thought I was it. I only found out a few years after that from her why I didn't get the play school thing. And this, she said, I haven't told you before because I thought it might affect what you did. Well, she said, they said you were too interesting. You didn't just sit there and go, I wonder what's through the long pause, round window. You went, what's through the round window then? Oh, no, they didn't want that. No, that was far too interesting. They did make me change my name, by the way.
Did they?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. We were making the series, and Judy said to me, right, Cynthia Felgate was head of things at the time. Wants to have lunch with you, right? She wants to talk to you about changing your name. I thought, oh, now hang on. She said, I know what you're going to say. Just see what she has to say first. So I go to this lunch at Television Centre. What's it going to be? Chris Higgins, Chris Smith, Chris Jones. What do they want to call me? Because at the time with Equity, I was Chris Lillycrap. And we got to the end of the lunch, went all the way through, and I'm waiting for this bombshell. And she said, right, she said, there was only one thing. We'd like you to change your name. And I thought, oh, she said, just listen to me. At the moment, you're Chris Lillycrap. I thought, yes. She said, we'd like you to change it to Christopher. And I said, Christopher what? She said, Lillycrap, why? A? Why? She said, think of it this way. It's three syllables, Christopher Lillycrap. Chris
Ah.
Lillycrap, all the emphasis, to be blunt, is on the crap. I mean, huge sigh of relief. I immediately said yes, because, I wasn't going to be Chris Bloggins or whatever. And yeah, so I had to become Christopher Lillycrap. Yeah. And that stuck with me through all the series I did. Yeah, wanted me to change my name. Couldn't knock me off the chair when she actually said it. I just ate.
How much input did you have into programs like Playboard and We'll Tell You a Story? Were you writing it as well, or was it a joint effort with
Playboard, I
others?
wrote, no, Playboard, I wasn't writing the scripts. I was writing the music for the lyrics for the songs and some of the lyrics of the songs. So we would have a story of the week, like the Gingerbread Man, or Henny Penny, Three Little Pigs. And there was a song to go with that. And Judy and I, between us, did the lyrics and the music. Yeah. That was my first input into doing that. But We'll Tell You a Story. I had a much big, that was another failed interview, by the way. I went for Rainbow, didn't get that. Charlie Warren, the producer, took me one side and he said, but come back and see me next week. I said, oh, okay, well, this is deja vu. We'd like to give you your own series. Oh, okay. I didn't get Rainbow. It would have been Rod, Jane, and Chris, but it wasn't, instead of Freddie. They gave me my own series, We'll Tell You a Story. And we'd like you to write, because the audition I did a story that I'd written and a song. And he said, well, that's exactly what we want you to do. So a large part of We'll Tell You a Story was me. I actually wrote the stories and the songs.
Watching episodes back now, I didn't realize it at the time. I think the way that you're telling the story, the way you present the program, looking back in retrospect, you owned those stories. You weren't just reading other people's words.
No, most, yeah, there were other stories in there. And when we went to Flix, there were other stories in there. There were books, but a lot of those stories were actually mine. And some of them were stories in songs as well.
Let's move on to another part of your life, which was media training. You then decided that you could actually take the skills you'd learned and go out into industry and teach them more widely.
That was another accident that happened. We'd moved from the South End and we're living in Farnborough in Hampshire. And one of those things that happens to people in our profession, suddenly the work had dried up. Oh dear, there isn't any. What are you going to do? There might be a health program for the bee, but there's nothing much else. And people who aren't in the profession don't realize that you can, it's feast and famine, doesn't it? And that determines the way you live your life. My agent phoned me and said, you live near Hartley Wintney, don't you? And I said, yes, it's about 10-minute drive down the road. Why? She said, well, there's a big national police training college there called Bram's Hill. And they do something there called media training. I said, what's that? She said, God knows. And the money's rubbish, but then you haven't got any, so Oh, thanks very much. So I know somebody there. Go along and you can go and observe a course. Be nice to them. If they like you, they might eventually give you a bit of help and training and let you loose on some unsuspecting superintendent in 3 months' time, and the money will still be rubbish, but there you go. So off I went to Bram's Hill, and I walked in and I got to the desk, and the girl at the desk said, yes. And I said, Mr. Dick, oh, thank God for that. She said, here's the list of candidates. She said, there's 10 of them. They're all inspectors. They're in room 12. Please break them for lunch at 12:30 because they missed their slot yesterday. Thank you. Picked up the phone. Hello, Bram said, whoa, hang on. I'm not a media trainer. I've never done this before. I have no idea. What could... She said, I know that. The bloke who does it's got the flu. Pardon? Yes. So we thought you could do it. You thought I could do it. This was the police service back then. You thought I could do it. And I thought, well, I'm here now. What the pfft, okay. I've no idea what I did that morning. I can't remember, not a clue. I know I broke them for lunch at 12:30 because they all came back at 1:30. I thought, God, I've got to do the afternoon now. So I did something else. Nobody moaned, nobody complained. They all said thank you, and off they went home. And I thought, okay. And so I went home, and my wife had it go. I said, I have no idea. Not a clue. I don't know. I interviewed some people on camera, and that was it. And my next morning, my agent phoned up and said, Chris, what on earth did you do yesterday? I thought, oh God, have I upset somebody? Have I upset a chief constable or something? No. They booked you for next Tuesday. No. Yes, they want to know if you've got any dates in June and July. Well, I was going on holiday. No, you're not. Oh, all right. And that was how it began. And I used to tell people on the course, I made it up. I actually made it up from my experiences of what I'd seen and what I'd seen happening in news and things. And basically, it was initially with the police service, it was helping them to actually get across what they wanted to say instead of not just answering the questions, but using them to actually get across, the fact that you might want to find this guy who's driving a white van, and they may not ask you that question. So you've got to make sure that you tell them, and it was that, and that began. And but then it grew out of all. I ended up doing emergency exercises for people I can't tell you about because you'd have to be shot and all that kind of thing. Health service I did as well. Senior surgeons. That the Royal Marsden, they're fascinating because they don't like being doctors, senior doctors, they don't like being asked questions. But that was fun, but it also supplemented the work that I was doing. And then Jeanette and I got into theatre producing and writing pantomimes and all that kind of thing. And so, yeah, a variety of stuff. We just didn't sit and wait for the phone to ring. I mean, she was in Singing in the Rain, City of Angels in the West End. At the same time as we were doing all, we had a multitude of income streams, if you like. None of them were all, incredibly put together. They kept us going and paid a mortgage.
Chris, I think we ought to get you back on around Christmas time and talk panto at that stage. Would you be up for
Yeah.
that?
Yeah, definitely.
Let's talk about your current music, not necessarily recorded for children, but
No.
actually harking back to that era. It's very, very emotional. Tell us about it.
Ah, yeah, You Will Be Me. I'm 76. It is about people of my generation, and the way they can actually disappear. And it came about, I was watching a program called Manhunt Night Stalker with Martin Clunes. He plays a detective. It was based on something the detective actually wrote. And it was about a case in the Metropolitan Police that where a man for 17 years terrorized the elderly and awful abuse of people, and it took 17 years to catch him. And eventually, the Clunes character picked up the case as a cold case and put resources and effort and everything into it, and they caught him. Within a year, they actually caught him. And just before the end of the program, he sat in the car with a cup of coffee with his sergeant, and he said, "You see, if these victims had been between the ages of 18 and 25, this would have been solved in a year. They'd have put resources, it would all have happened. The trouble is, they weren't, they were old people." And she said, "Yes." As a couple walked past, an elderly couple walked past on the opposite side of the road, she said, "Was the effect?" She said, "Yeah, the thing is, they're all around us. We just don't see them." I thought, "Oh, ah, we don't see them." And that became the start of the song. "You might not see me at all." Basically, it's that, okay, but as you turn away, I was you only yesterday, and tomorrow you'll be me.
We will play the track when we say goodbye in a few moments' time, but briefly, the video that goes along with it, it's gorgeous and makes use of puppets very much like in the old days, really.
But it is, and that was it. It's very interesting that, because it got to me personally, because Jeff Chegwin, the late Keith's brother, who's the PR guy in the music industry, I got to know through Keith. And he and I were thinking, we need a video, and we had, with an old man walking along and all this kind of thing. And then we put it out to people, and Eddie Morgan, ex Newsnight, and one of his colleagues, George Taylor, came up with this idea. And when they presented it to me, I'm just going to have these puppets in it, and the old puppets and the new puppets. And I'm like, "Puppet, hey? That's never going to work, is it?" And then I realized what he was doing. And what he was doing was, I've written "You Will Be Me." And what he was doing was, he was referencing me as the subject of this as well. And well, when you see it, I don't know what you think, but I think it works incredibly. I mean, there's me looking back at me as being Busker, in the series I did. And then there's the puppet looking back at a young puppet with a guitar. And it's and the end thing actually was my idea, where I'm just on the bench with the young lad, and then I'm not there. There's just the guitar.
I've heard a lot of songs doing this program over the years, and very few of them pull at the heartstrings on the very first listening in the same way that this does. And Chris, I would recommend everybody goes out and listens to it. It's part of an album. We don't have much time left. I do want to squeeze in that single, that wonderful single, You Will Be Me.
The album will be called "Whatever Happened to Christopher Lillycrap?" go to chrislillycrap.com. Chris Lillycrap, you remember him? The man who changed his name. Chrislillycrap.com, and you'll see blogs and things about it all there. But it and why it came about, and a particular guitar that started all this music just completely out of the blue through lockdown. It was just one of those bizarre things that just kismet, fate. And the bloke who lives just down the lane here, once I'd written these things, I've got to get them recorded. Turns out there's a guy living literally 5 minutes away on this Greek island from me. He was a heavy rockist, and you would not think that he could do, when you listen to "You Will Be Me," he did all the arrangements on that, and they are fantastic. You would not think, looking at him, it's a million miles from Def Leppard, John Bon Jovi, or whatever. It's just nothing like that. And he did those arrangements. Stevie McAndrew is brilliant, absolutely brilliant.
Chris Lillycrap, or Christopher Lillycrap, as the BBC say you should be pronounced.
I should be there. Yes.
Thank you so much for joining us. And as I've said to people in the past, thank you so much for being such a part of the childhood and turning my age of people into the sort of people we are. Thank you very much indeed.
You might not see me at all, and if you do, I'll be in your way. Cause I'm the one who takes too long in the queue while you're waiting to pay. And I'll probably drop my change because I wouldn't use a card. Come on, old man, we haven't got all day. And if you're next to me in the pub, you probably don't want to chat, cause I'll go on about how the world was, and you don't want that. And then I'll talk about my wife and kids, life I used to have. Just remember, as you turn away, that I was you only yesterday, and tomorrow you'll be me, you will be me. You might not see me at all pushing past me, 'cause I'm slow, and I'm not very important now, not someone you need to know. And the story of my glory days wouldn't interest you. But then, remember, as you turn away, that I was you only yesterday, and tomorrow you'll be me, you will be me. The world is moving fast, and you really don't have the time to bother with the likes of me, I understand that, and it's fine. Because you might not see me at all, even though I'm everywhere. And I don't want your pity, or for you to pretend that you care. But a nod or a smile would be okay, to acknowledge that I'm there, and to remember, when you turn away, that I was you only yesterday, and tomorrow you'll be me, you will be me. You will be me.